This is Lance Cottrell, and you're listening to the Privacy Blog Podcast, brought to you by Anonymizer. Welcome to our podcast for December, our last podcast of 2012. In this episode, I will be running down some of the big privacy and security events and trends of the past year. First, let's talk about the Zappos security breach in January and the LinkedIn breach in June. Zappos had over 24 million user accounts and passwords stolen, where LinkedIn had over 6 million accounts and passwords. The real issue here is not just those sites, but the fact that many people, maybe most people, use the same account names and passwords across multiple websites. So once the hackers get that information, they can't just compromise those accounts, which may not be that sensitive, but may also be able to compromise accounts at work or at your bank or financial institutions. In February, Google got caught tricking the iOS Safari browser into allowing them to track you even when you told the browser not to allow third-party cookies. They did that by tricking the browser into submitting a form in a way that looked like you had initiated the form submission, and so the browser allowed them to set cookies. This shows a larger issue that just because you set a privacy preference in your computer or in your browser doesn't actually mean that they'll be honored in practice. In April, a credit card processing company called Global Payments was breached, leading to the compromise of up to 1.5 million credit card numbers. The problem here is that the entire security model of credit cards really is the number and your address and the security code, which is exactly the information you give to every merchant that you do business with online. And the upside is that you're generally not held responsible for any charges that are made on those cards when they're stolen. But you do end up paying for it. The price gets carried by the merchant and just gets rolled into the prices that you pay. And it's a lot of money that goes into dealing with these credit card frauds and break-ins. In June, the travel website Orbitz got caught targeting hotel results at Mac users. They specifically showed more expensive hotels to people seen to be using Mac computers than they did to people making exactly the same search from Windows or other devices. This is really just an example of the ability of websites to completely tailor their content based on who you are, what kind of computer or device you're using, where you're located, your history of activities. In fact, because most pages on the internet now are dynamic, they're computer generated, so they can be made to change easily in any way the website wants to provide different information to you than to the person sitting next to you. One of the really shocking examples is one I've already talked about. That was when reporter Matt Honan's computer was hacked back in August. The situation there was he was compromised because of interlocking vulnerabilities with different providers. Between Gmail, Apple, and Amazon, they used different information to authenticate users and considered different information not at all sensitive. So, for example, one of the companies would show you the last four digits of all of the credit cards in an account, while another company used exactly the last four digits of your credit card as an authenticator to allow you to change your password. So by going among these various sites, they were able to reset Matt's passwords, take over his account, and wipe out all of his computers. While there's no ironclad defense against this, I try to cover my bases by using different email addresses, different account names, and lying about the security questions they ask. So, for example, if it said, "What's your mother's name?" I might say, "Magilla Gorilla." In September, there was a massive security hole announced in Internet Explorer. It allowed the insertion of malware, which could be used to take over the user's computer. Now, I'm not picking on this to pick on Microsoft, but rather to make the larger point that the browser is now the portal of choice for attackers. It's the way they're going to get into your computer, and it's almost impossible to prevent because browsers are capable of running so many different kinds of active content, they almost become like a computer in themselves. They can execute arbitrary code, they can perform almost any kind of operation, and therefore, in general, they can be caused to do things incorrectly and provide the attacker access to your computer. In November, we had David Petraeus. I'm sure all of you have heard about how his Gmail account got compromised and all of his emails got exposed. What's surprising with this is how easy it is to get the emails. To start with, any email stored by a cloud provider, like Google or Hotmail or Yahoo, can be obtained by law enforcement without a search warrant if it's older than 6 months old. This is based on the 1980s assumption that email that had been sitting in an account more than 6 months had been abandoned. This, of course, is in a time before cloud-based storage or even the use of IMAP, where emails would routinely be stored and permanently archived on the server. He also made use of a technique called drafting. Drafting is when two users share access to an account. One of them will compose an email and then just save it as a draft without ever sending it. The other user can then log in, read the draft email, and delete it. The idea being that there wouldn't be logs of the activity stored because the email had never been sent. As it turns out, that's really no longer the case. Many of the cloud services do maintain logs and records of all of the draft messages that have been composed. Finally, he and the woman were identified by looking at the location information that the cloud email provider was storing. Most email services capture your physical location when you log in. In fact, Google makes this a security feature. So if you log into the Google website in the lower right, you'll see it says last activity. If you click on the details, it'll show you a list of all the times you've logged in with timestamps and your location. So they were able to identify the owner of the account by comparing and correlating the real person's travel activities with the same pattern of logins into the Gmail account. A trend we're seeing continue to grow this year is in targeted social engineering, or spear phishing attacks. Our experience is that with a handcrafted attack, it's possible to achieve almost 100% success in getting the target to open an email. Imagine if someone spent the time to research your activities, knew which conferences you were going to, what sessions that you had spoken at, and tailored an email saying, "Hey, I met you at this conference, I heard your talk, we talked briefly in the hallway, and here's that idea I said I would send you." The odds that you're going to click on the attachment in that email are incredibly high, and there's almost no way to defend against it. This leads to the other trend that I'm really seeing, which is towards detection and mitigation rather than prevention. Trying to prevent intruders is very brittle. It sort of requires 100% success. You need to make sure that they never get inside your perimeter. But we know that that's effectively impossible. So the new thinking around this is to try to detect these breaches as quickly as possible so that they can get eliminated. And also to organize the way you use your computing resources to minimize damage. So that's it for the Privacy Blog podcast in 2012. We'd love to hear what you think of it. Give us your feedback at theprivacyblog.com. And we look forward to talking to you some more in 2013.